William Fever's two-volume biography of the artist Lucian Freud has its origins in an assignment Fever got from the Sunday Times magazine in the 1970s. That encounter led to a lifelong friendship, which involved regular conversations on the telephone between artist and art critic, with Fever taking notes and even making recordings along the way. The first volume, The Lives of Lucian Freud, Youth, has just been published, and its author, William Fever, joins me now from London. When I say that, William, it strikes me that if you were making notes and recordings, maybe not in the 70s, maybe into the 80s and 90s, this was a long game. You had your eye on this two-volume ball for a long time, had you?
Yes, there was a bit of a pause after 1973 when I first knew him, wrote the first article. But then he was 50, and this was the first big article he'd ever had written about him. He was about to have his retrospective, again, the first big museum-type show that he'd ever had. So he was a rather late starter on the art scene, although he'd been an artist all along. And I was, I was in Newcastle, and I was writing things, but not sort of getting into the Sunday Times very much. And the Sunday Times got me down because somebody had already been trying to do this article and had been asking too many questions. And the first thing I said to Lucian when I met him was, I'm not interested in your private life or anything like that. And he was to remind me of this about 1,000 times over the years afterwards, as I got to know him better and got to know more and more about him. I didn't really get to know him until I put a painting of his, a large painting, London Double 11 After Watteau, into an exhibition in Liverpool, which then went to Dublin. This was in the early 80s. And after that, he trusted me as being someone who could be relied on to appreciate his work. And I think because he rang up every day, and it's a long phone call, it was, you know, how are things, how goes it, he'd say, and he'd proceed into gossip and chat and aphorism and all sorts of things. I found I was writing stuff down, and that became a habit. And that's really why it developed that way. And then I started doing his exhibitions and so on, and got more involved writing catalogues and things for him, doing interviews with him for The Observer. So it gradually silted up, I suppose, like a rather flat estuary.
Well, and obviously with conversations like that on a daily basis, you got into all sorts of areas that perhaps, including the personal, which you wouldn't have gotten to otherwise. This volume, it follows the autobiography, or the chronological route. It starts back at his birth, and a childhood that he himself described as a very steady childhood. Would you agree?
Yes, he was sort of posh Berlin. He lived in Regentenstrasse. And this is the bit which is now around the Neue National Gallery. It's a very, very sort of really plush part of town. And he, although he went to the local school, which was full of working class kids, before very long, a very thriving Hitler Youth set up. And he was brought up sort of very, very protectively. You know, the dentist and so on came to the house rather than go to the dentist. And it was only gradually towards 1933 that things started changing tone and attitude, and because, of course, German Jewish family, they very sensibly and early in the day left. That's in 1933, which was when the very first people started emigrating from Germany to escape possible problems.
But having Sigmund Freud as your grandfather, what was that? Did he speak much about that? About was it a long shadow? Was it just that's Grandad, like other children might say, or was he aware of that?
Well, Grandad lived in Vienna and only came to Berlin occasionally for treatment for his cancer of the jaw. He would click his false teeth at Lucian, and which intrigued him. And he gave him things like prints of the Bruegel Seasons paintings and Dürer reproductions. And so he sort of encouraged him, and he loved Max and Moritz, the sort of naughty boy strip cartoon which flourished at the time. And so, one way or another, he was a rather good grandfather, but an absent one, as you say, distant shadow, really. Sigmund left to his grandchildren their share of the royalties, which were pretty enormous at one stage. So Lucian had a bit of money to bail him out all the time, but he also used a lot of money in his adult life and made it and lost it with great rapidity. I think he would have made a very good study for his father, his grandfather to have attempted. But on the whole, I think there was an idea that he, of the three brothers, there was Stefan, there was Clement, who became, if you remember, an advertising celebrity. Lucian was the middle one, and he was the one with the imagination, brains, initiative, and absolutely sheer determination to do what he wanted to do in life. And so I think the money was better spent on him, his grandfather's money, than perhaps it was on his brothers and one or two cousins.
The artistic side of things, then, you say that Grandad had encouraged this early on, obviously, but you interviewed him, you were saying he was 50 really near that time, was he? He was like
when I first met him, yeah. He was 50, yes.
Yeah, so he was a middle-aged, and not, he hadn't really hit the levels of success that he did in later life.
Well, no, but except that extraordinary, from the age of 4 or 5, we have a lot of drawings which his mother preserved.
Yeah, they're extraordinary in the book to see those, you know, the childhood drawings of Lucian Freud.
Him looking like Noddy,
yeah.
And him and a flight of birds taking off from a tree.
Yeah.
I mean, really imaginative and individual. And I know a lot of when one has children and think they're very talented and then they stop being very talented in art usually. Well, Lucian actually just went on absolutely uninterruptedly for, you know, his well into nearly 90 when he died. And I think there was a kind of strange groove which he pursued, and he never thought of going left or right or abandoning it. It was actually born in him, and it was largely, I think, possibly due to the encouragement, adulation of his mother, who, for whom he was an absolute favourite. And she even asked him at a very early age if he'd give her drawing lessons, which is actually a bit embarrassing, I think, for a mother. But she, her support was enormous, and I think that, which was something he also resented somewhat.
Yeah, he found that stifling, particularly in his teen years, but even into his adulthood, I think he found it quite upsetting, didn't he?
Well, she'd write to his girlfriends and ask for his letters and back, and she'd cosset him, and she'd disapprove very quietly but heroically. She'd disapprove of girlfriends and one or two broods of children. She took a point of seeking out and looking after, and so this Lucian regarded as interference.
Yeah.
But actually, in the end, I mean, when he painted an enormous number of paintings of her when she was old and depressed and a widow, he made something absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's nothing like it in art, this sequence of paintings of his mother.
Yeah, I think we saw some of them recently at the Irish Museum of Modern Art in Dublin. How much of a wild child was he? Perhaps he had his grandfather's money to help him be a wild child throughout the 60s, but he seems to have had, even by the standards of the 1960s, quite a racy life.
Well, I don't know if you have got children or had children, but children are born that way. I mean, I've seen two of my children come out of the womb, and you knew from the word go that if they were different. And it's... It must be genetic, but Lucian did have this extraordinary gift for being totally focused on things, and it could be the horses with the jockeys, and it could be the roulette table, but more importantly, always it was on his painting, which was undisturbed by any other thing that happened in his life.
He was, I don't know if prolific is quite the right word, but he certainly worked incredible hours. Now, he had long conversations with you clearly every day as well, and with others.
Yes.
But he spent a lot of time in the studio, certainly later on when he got over his 1960s escapades. He was in the studio, it would seem, morning, noon and night.
Well, you see, the studio was always part of the condemned dwelling or the house, the flat, and he only had a house towards the end of his life. And so being in the studio, not in the studio, didn't make much difference. You had a bath after being in the studio, or he did rather, liked having baths to break things up during the day and the night. But he had enormous energy, and because painting is either solitary or semi-solitary pursuit, I mean, if you have a model there, you have someone, but it's extreme concentration, and his relapses in the evening very early morning hours were like those of a chef, rather. You know, they work with great intensity, and then they make sort of merry hell or whatever afterwards, because it's a way of coming down from what Lucian used to call the overheated engine.
How demanding was he, though, on his sitters in a situation like that?
Oh, very. I mean, when Jerry Hall sat for him and then decided to go on holiday to Ireland, wicked place, Ireland, without asking permission or getting clearance, he was so furious, he painted her out of the picture and put his studio assistant in instead, which meant the studio assistant appears naked with big breasts, a suckling Gabriel, Jerry Hall and Mick Jagger's last child together.
Quite an interesting Freudian Freudian picture, that one.
He was so pleased, he rang up straight away and said, I've done it. She's now turned into a man.
There you go. William Fever talking to us about the first of his first volume of his biography of Lucian Freud. It's called Lives of Lucian Freud. Youth is the title given to the first volume, and it's published by Bloomsbury.